You need anything else from us, Matt? You sure? Just checking.
Well, let's go over the list of things you're supposed to do.
Tell us what else we don't have.
Yeah. How are you doing, bud?
Ready on the right.
Yes, indeed.
Ready on the left. Good afternoon, everyone. I'd like to convene the February 14th, 2017 meeting of the Joint Committee on Ways and Means, excuse me, Subcommittee on Natural Resources. We are in session. Good afternoon to everyone. I am going to open a public hearing on House Bill 5028-5028. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, co-chairs, members of the committee. For the record, again, my name is Lisa Sumption. I'm the director of the Oregon Parks and Recreation Department. Thank you for the opportunity to come back and provide another overview of our budget today. And we plan to cover lottery funds, spending kind of details by program, policy option packages, and our key performance measures. Feel free to ask questions as we go along and engage in any. If you have comments as we go through, feel free to stop us. So we wanted to just briefly go over lottery funds. Lottery funds were overwhelmingly approved by voters, not once but twice in Oregon. The fund constitutionally dedicates 15% of the net lottery proceeds to Parks and Natural Resource Fund. 7.5% of that goes to OWEB, and the other 7.5% of that comes to Parks. Constitutionally, at least 12% of our OPRD budget goes right back out to local government community grant programs. And so we wanted to demonstrate to you how the agency revenue is projected. My staff love when I say this all the time, that revenue or budgets are not reality. They're projected forecasts. So when the agency revenue is projected to come into the organization, unlike other agencies and funds, our lottery and other funds are not restricted or prohibited how we can spend them within the organization. Our past business approach has been immediately we kind of focus on the big three, our acquisitions, our facility investment program, and our grant program. So we immediately allocate our lottery funds off the top to those three programs, and then we kind of think about the remainder as creating a more evenly distribution across our other direct services, which would be our back office positions and our field positions. And we try to closely align the lottery and other funds split about. So those positions might be, at one point they were 39% lottery funds, and we're projecting this time that we'd like to spend them more closer to 50-50, 48-51 to be exact. So we've demonstrated with a pretty responsible history that we know that these things will ebb and flow. Sometimes lottery goes up, sometimes lottery goes down, same thing with other funds. We either watch these closely internally and adjust them, or we work closely with BAM and LFO to make the necessary adjustments to keep in line with our expenditures due to any changes in our revenue forecasts.
Director Sumption, would you try raising your mic just a little bit?
Is that better?
I think so.
Maybe closer. Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Good there? Okay. So you saw this yesterday, but we wanted to go over it a little more detail today. This is our projected revenues, and it demonstrates where we anticipate actually spending these revenues. You see the dedicated lottery funds there on the left-hand side. The other funds come from things like park user fees, RV fees, all-terrain vehicle permits, other agency transfers, things like roads and rest area transfers from ODOT. And then our federal grants are our land and water conservation funds, our heritage funding, and other grant programs. And so this chart demonstrates how we would project spending those revenues that you just saw. The community support side of the equation here is that 12% of dedicated lottery funds that go back to our local government grant program. And it includes our other grant programs, such as heritage programs, the community opportunity grant program, which is through RV funds, the Main Street program, the Veteran and War Memorial program, and then the Land and Water Conservation Fund, just to name a few of them. And then our central services is more of that back office essential functions, budgeting, accounting, payroll, IT, procurement. Park development is our FIP, our facility investment program. It's the maintenance back into the park system, and our acquisitions. And then direct services, pretty much everything else, and it's primarily field services. And so we'll just go deeper into each one of those areas just so you can kind of see a little bit more about how we highlight these. But our direct services really is all about operating your park system. park development is that you can see there on the smaller circle there that the acquisitions is about 10%, and 90% of that particular budget goes right back into our facilities to invest in maintaining them. And at the top, you see those number E3 here. That goes to your, I think on OLIS, you have the agency budget presentation there where you could follow along there if you wanted to. And then this one is our community support budget. This goes back to that $42.9 million or 20% of our total budget that goes directly to local government grants, land and water conservation, wreck and trails, which is more of that non-motorized trail opportunity. Scenic bike and waterways is another one that I haven't mentioned. ATV, if you were really interested in more of them or want to talk more, F1 and F2 pages in your book have all of them listed. And this one, essential services, this is that back office essential. We like to say it's equally as important as our field rangers. If this stuff doesn't happen, they can't really do their jobs, nor would they get paid to do their jobs. So this is also where we, in our central service budget, you'll see there the debt service. We centralize it in one budget, so it's not spread across different summary cross-references. So what you do see there is that debt other, that's debt service coming in for the Main Street Revitalization Program, Willamette Falls, and Forest Park. And that's essentially other funds from outside of the organization passing through, and we're making those bond payments. That other small piece there that you see, the debt for the fair, that's the amount that we retained in the organization when they left the agency in 2015. We didn't want to send them with the debt with them. We wanted to make sure that they were going to be able to be successful without that holding them back. So that is our dedicated lottery funds pay for that debt service. And director's office budget, this is just showing you, there's the functions in there, the director's office, our Oregon Parks and Recreation Commission expenditures are here, and our agency internal audit function, HR, and our communications and research division. And now the stuff that you probably really want to talk about, our policy action packages. So some of these are really just more technical, but package 101 that you see there, that is just a standard. So when we build our budget, it's inflation, and our fleet and our utilities are actually higher than inflation. So this is the adjustment necessary for us to actually be able to pay for the expenditures that we get. 103 is that across the board $2 fee increase, except for tents, that would actually, that you would then set the rate closer to market, and that funding would go directly back into adding additional rangers on the front line to support our visitors and maintain our special places. And then that 104 flex fees, that one is a companion legislation, which is House Bill 2318. And that particular, once you've set that rate closer to market, that particular legislation would allow the Oregon Park and Recreation Commission to actually set flexible fees to run the camping side of the house a little bit more like a tourism type business. And then that funding that came in from that particular policy option pack or legislative concept would go directly back into park maintenance. Package 105, invest in people that we serve. So this is the big ask, the risky ask, especially in a cuts budget, and we appreciate you even entertaining us asking. This would allow us, through our already existing revenues, to provide additional staff to make sure that we're continuing to provide the greatest experience possible and maintain the system as we go into the future. This helps us keep up with the ever-growing visitor base that's visiting our park system and that expanding shoulder season we mentioned yesterday. Package 106 is, it would be in this current biennium, adding an additional $1 million into our acquisition budget over last biennium. And then 107 would be adding an additional investment to maintain our park system and our facility investment program. And 070 and 090 are more technical adjustments because when we build the budget, forecasts come in, things kind of go up or down. So those are just adjustments based on the forecast since we built the budget. And then 102 is one of these things that people don't always understand, but it's more of a carryover. When we do $42 million worth of grants, sometimes those local communities can't come up with the match. They can't get shovels ready in the ground. Things happen. So these are obligated funds that we carry over so that they're able to commit and complete their projects. And then 090 is the adjustment for DAS service charges. And then when you see there in 105 where it's under – Central Services and Heritage, those are positions that would be, I'm sorry, Direct Services and Central Services, those would be positions that would be part of that 105 ask that would correspond to those two budget areas. So that's a very high level overview of budget and our policy option package, and I'm sure you have lots of questions for us on that.
Thank you very much. Subcommittee members, questions or comments? Senator Girard.
Yeah, I have a couple questions. The new staff that you're asking for, with what you have now without your fee increase, is that sustainable, or is the fee increase directly interwoven with the new staff request?
Co-Chair Witt, Co-Chair Frederick, for the record, my name is M.G. Devereaux, Deputy Director of Oregon Parks and Recreation. Senator Girard, so there are two places that we have staff asked. The first is in the package that would increase the fees by those $2, and the second would be by shifting some of our ending balance into those positions. What we believe is that we are currently at a cracking point in terms of our ability to maintain those facilities and customer service with the visitation increase that we talked about in last biennium. And so while we would still maintain service, we believe that that service is eroding, and the long-term cost of that would be a decreased visitor experience and our inability to keep up with maintenance issues on our facilities. For instance, one of the parks in your district, Silver Falls State Parks, has about 132 historically significant roofs. So that means that not only do we have the normal activities that we would need for any roof that you have on your home, but there's an additional layer of compliance and checking that we need to do to make sure that we're maintaining that in a historically accurate manner, that we have all of the right clearances from the State Historic Preservation Office, and that we're using materials that would be a little bit higher in cost. It's not just running down to a local Ace Hardware and grabbing three-tab asphalt shingles. It's making those shingles sometimes in-house or finding the right vendor to do that.
Please. But the question is it sustainable? So if we give you these staff increases, is the projection going to be, what I don't want is if we give you this, then the next session you're going, hey, continuing service budget, we need more money than what we're getting, and therefore, please, we need even more increases or dip into the general fund.
Co-Chair Witt, Co-Chair Frederick, Senator Girard, I'm sorry, I misunderstood your question. So, yes, we recognize that there is a significant ask in terms of how we use that ending balance to fund some of those positions. However, as Director Sumption mentioned in her introduction, one of the things that we've been very good at doing is working with that balance of lottery funds and other funds to accurately project out. There is a risk that at some point in time, if there is something unforeseen in the projections and our revenues go down significantly either on the other fund or the lottery funds, we'll be in a position of having to go back on those position asks, but that's a responsibility that the agency is willing to take on those positions. We believe that with the investment of the positions now, we can grow our revenue, and we're doing other things to help with that in terms of our marketing, some of the efficiency efforts that we've done inside the agency so that we won't be in that position. We're also very aware that general fund is not an option for our agency, especially with our ability to grow our own, and so we would like that opportunity to grow our own first and bring you back a solution so that we are not here in a biennium saying without those staff, without that investment in facilities, now we are really in a crisis.
Additional questions or comments? Representative Esquivel.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. You have $1 million to for new and expanded parks for Oregonians. What do you have in mind for that, or is that just something that you, I mean, do you have something under contract that you're purchasing, or is it something that you wish list, or is it something that, hey, when the deal comes by, so we want to make sure we apply it? What is that? What is that about?
Co-chairs, Representative Esquivel. So that $1 million that you're referring to, that is in addition to, I believe, that we have a $1.4 million ask in the current biennium. Last biennium, we had made a very conscious effort to say we were going to reduce acquisitions to start focusing in a little bit more on maintenance after the 10 the 10-year park a year program and some of the other mandates that came into the organization. So this million was sort of an attempt to try to add some more back into the acquisition budget. To answer, I think, your second question to that is our Oregon Park and Recreation Commission has the authority to acquire property. They have a watch list. They have a nomination process to make sure that it fits and it meets the criteria of what we would want in our state park system.
Follow up,
please.
Do you have anything in mind, like I asked?
Co-chairs and Representative Escobar, we...
Or anything under contract?
I don't think we have currently anything under contract. We don't have a lot. I mean, sometimes in real estate transactions, we don't throw them out there publicly because we don't want to ruin our ability to negotiate them.
Didn't ask you to identify it.
But yes,
just ask if you had anything.
We have a watch list, and we have a priority list of things that the commission would like to acquire.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you very much. Anyone else? Representative Powell.
Yeah, so you talked a little bit about investing in the next generation of Oregonians coming to our parks yesterday. I'm wondering if you can draw my attention to the pieces of the budget, and maybe they're not there yet because you're still formulating a plan, but where should I be looking into what kind of investments we're making into these folks?
Go ahead.
Co-chairs, Representative Power, I think the primary place that we demonstrate that is with the direct services. A lot of our outreach happens at the ranger level where we're conducting school programs, where we're working with our community members to bring folks into the park. The second place was inside the Communication and Research Division in the director's office, which we made a decision last biennium to reorient a call center that we had that was supporting our reservation system. When we started that reservation system, over 70% of our business came in through the phone. As of last biennium, that was down to only about 18%. So we made the decision to reorient those folks back into our headquarters office and have them start focusing on those marketing opportunities to try to connect people back to their state park system. We have one more piece of today's presentation after a conversation about our KPMs that highlights a program that we're also trying to work with our State Park Foundation, an outside independent nonprofit that helps do a capacity building for the agency. And they started a program called Ticket to Ride, which allows school groups the opportunity to have transportation into our facilities for free at the foundation's expense through fundraising. And our commitment to that program is to have the ranger staff available. The challenge, and one of those things that we've been talking about, is the majority of those visits will happen during the school year, which is also our off season, which is when we don't have seasonals, which means that we're needing to shift ranger staff who, if in the off season, didn't have other responsibilities, would be doing the work of maintenance on those facilities. But we're asking them to take on that responsibility of connecting with those kids and other groups that are coming in. Did you need more?
Co-chairs, Representative Power, can I add on to that? So the other piece that I would be remiss if I didn't bring in there is that flexibility around the fees and the ability to charge a little bit more at another site to be able to offer deep discounts. We've already started that engagement, but what we're seeing is that if we offer engagement to try to reduce barriers for folks to come to the parks, we don't have that additional revenue to continue to expand services. So that is one area that we are really hoping that the fee piece will give us some flexibility to start opening up larger opportunities for, you know, we know at least the Latino communities would love the opportunity to have larger places to congregate and celebrate family. And so in that park development budget, you'll see there, it may not be acquisitions, Representative Escobar. It may be park development within a park that already exists that we can expand services that Oregonians are telling us that they would like to have. So it's part of that engagement conversation.
How are you, I mean, given that there may be some language barriers or different ways that people find out about things other than just through websites, what are your plans to communicate dynamic, you know, changing prices if we move forward with that this year?
Co-chairs and Representative Power. So one of the things that we did last year, we worked with, I get this wrong every time, it's KUPN out of Portland through the Latino Network, where we actually went to them instead of the traditional way we do things. This will create commercials or public outreach and say, this is, you know, this is the rate, this is how you use the park. We went to the community and said, these are the things we want to communicate. It's your park. How would you communicate to your community? Mm-hmm. For a very small investment, they actually created three commercials that started around spring break. and they were the ones who produced them, and it wasn't us putting kind of those traditional pieces. The other thing is
Spanish, and then the other thing is
Deputy Devereaux mentioned is by shifting those resources from the call center business back to marketing and branding, we'll actually, with some of these positions, be able to bring on folks that can actually focus on how do we reach those more non-traditional communities that we're not engaging with now, and is that through social media? Is that through different, it could be in some communities, posters, I mean, just a different way than what we've done our traditional brochure since 1950 or 1940, I think we've seen some go back to.
Senator Girard.
Thank you, Chair Witt. I might be talking Greek here, so if you haven't heard of what I'm talking about, it's all right. But in Pacific City, I don't know if you're familiar with the court decision that came down concerning dory fishing and signage, and it's a big deal to the Coastal Caucus. That's got to be scaring the bejeebies out of you. I mean, for Silver Falls, I don't know how you could put a sign every place that there's a danger. So there is a bill out to help the Coastal Caucus. I just wonder if you don't want legislation somewhere down the road to protect you for what I consider protecting you from liability that I don't think that you should have. And I don't think in Silver Falls I want to read about every place there's a danger and a sign. So,
Co-Chair Witt, Co-Chair Frederick, Senator Girard, thank you. you know, the Ortega case was an unfortunate incident where a young man was surfing in between a boundary where traditionally the dory fleet comes ashore, and there was an incident between him and a dory boat that he had his arm severed briefly. There was a long court case that ultimately decided that Oregon State Parks was 70% responsible for the accident because we didn't have the right signage on the beach to indicate that that issue could happen. So we're currently working with our partners at DOJ to appeal that decision you know, bring some clarity to what our role and responsibility is. Independently of that, there was another court case that was decided this summer out of Portland that held that employees of agencies like Parks and Recreation are not necessarily entitled to recreational immunity from the public lands law, which is a significant concern for us because when we have a court case, the agency will step into that court case and defend our employees when they're working in course and scope. This case indicated that those employees could be held individually responsible for doing their jobs. So we are working very closely with the Oregon Recreation and Park Association and a couple of other folks to bring some clarity to that conversation. My other answer to you, Senator Girard, is so yes, we are very concerned about that from a couple of ways. One is we never want to see somebody injured in one of our parks. It's traumatic for staff who respond. It's obviously not the recreation experience that we think folks are coming to parks to enjoy. One of the byproducts of this tremendous increase in visitation is we are seeing people who are coming into the recreation environment who may not be fully familiar with all of the dangers or all of the traditional ways of behavior that happen in a state park. There have been a couple of national incidents, one of them in Oregon just this last summer, where someone decided that it was okay to graffiti a very a special place on federal land that went, you know, live on Facebook and Instagram, and you know there was a tremendous outcry. We had a case similar, very close to that issue in Pacific City, where someone knocked over a very unique rock formation on Cape Rwanda, and caused a tremendous amount of outcry and damaged a resource. And there were various reports about why they damaged that resource. But it was, again, one of those issues that we would like to have staff in those places that can help educate and interpret the value of the resource. So we're looking at a wide range of responses, one through help in this body to clarify some of those policy issues, but also it's one of those reasons that we are asking for those additional staff so that we can have boots on the ground to help people understand the environment that they're recreating in and the safety and
implications of some of their decisions while they're out inside of our park environments.
Just a brief follow. If you need a bill, because I mean I have a lot of state parks in my district, and I feel very strongly that you can't put a warning up for everything that's out there on the coast. Sneaker waves. Right. You got sea urchins. You got sharks. You got logs that can roll over on the top of you. You can't list all the dangers that someone can get into. Riptides. There's just you can't edge. And people have to be able to go in these at their own risks. And it really bothers me with this court decision. And I'm glad that you're appealing it. But it's very, very scary for the state to pick up the liability every time someone gets hurt for not using common sense. So I'd be very happy to drop a bill for you if it comes to that.
Thank you, sir.
The support.
Representative Esquivel.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, does this committee have any bills where it could do that if necessary? I know the other committees do.
Yeah.
It's not a policy committee.
Just policy committees?
Yeah. It's a policy committee issue.
Well, Senator Girard, thank you for bringing that subject up. I was totally unaware, and I am aghast. I suspect that were you to sponsor a bill that you might find several ready co-sponsors here among those of us at the dais.
Well, the Coastal Caucus has a bill. That it deals with the Pacific City court case, and that just says that over on the coast, we're not liable as a state for what happens on the beach, and that signage isn't required, or we just can't list everything. However, I don't think the bill is written to include such places like Silver Creek Falls or. Maloma Falls, if you walk up through there. There's just a lot of places that these parks have that the beauty of it, you don't want to scar to tell people to use their own common sense. Yeah. So,
well, and I would be interested as a non-attorney at some point. I was always under the impression that you couldn't sue the king, so apparently I'm obviously off the mark on that.
Chair Witt.
Yes.
There was a decision, and I know a lot about this because it came down as a city councilor and affected one of the parks that we were in the process of opening. But there was a Supreme Court decision last fall that changed the way that immunity is applied to individual public employees. There's two bills already in the Judiciary Committee that address this. So I just checked. Neither scheduled for a hearing yet, but.
Just by way of editorial, I don't know how an employee can oftentimes complete his or her daily work and duties to the state of Oregon if one has to be worried every move that you make that you could be held personally liable. I think at some point we owe an obligation to the folks that are doing the work to provide them some element of protection here. And again, that's the chair's editorial. Additional questions or comments from the subcommittee? I'm not seeing any. Before we were to, yes.
We'll continue Director. For key performance measures if you would like us to.
Please.
Okay.
Please.
Just didn't want you to excuse us and we didn't get the chance to go over them with you.
Co-Chair Witt, Co-Chair Frederick, for the record, MG Devereaux, Deputy Director of Oregon Parks and Recreation Department. Okay. We have seven key performance measures in our budget. The first is park visitors and visitors per acre. The second is about our heritage programs and the benefits they offer, which measures the number of sites benefiting from our heritage program. The third is about our grant program, percentage of communities benefiting from that grant. The fourth is property acquisition and the percent of a goal set about how we measure property acquisition for the agency. The fifth is about facility backlog, which measures the percent reduction in the historic backlog that was identified in 1999 prior to the Measure 66 and Parks and Natural Resource Fund coming to the agency. Six is about customer satisfaction and our visitor ratings, and seven is about the commission and the best practices and their adherence to those. Overall, park visit per acre, as you heard yesterday, are considerably up. We are already third in the nation in days visits, and in this last fiscal year, we rose to 513 visitors per acre, which is a 12% increase, driving a lot of the conversations that we previously had about what that visitation means for our agency. We are consistent in our heritage program in terms of continuing to focus on delivering and expanding the strength that we give to local governments and federal agency partners whose activities qualify for this. While we are slightly under the mark, we still work with all of those communities to make sure that they have information about what it means to register something on the National Register of Historic Places, and that is largely driven outside of our control. We manage the process. Other people generally bring issues to us, and we are a little bit below where some of our surrounding states are, but we can typically have swings in how that moves forward to us. For grants and community programs, we are under in this key performance measure, but we anticipate that increasing a trend of community involvement and conversations with the community is one of those factors that we can help do something a little bit more innovative in this section. We provide mentoring and training opportunities to those communities who traditionally don't interact with our grant programs to try to understand if it is an information barrier, an awareness barrier for the grant programs that we offer, or if there are other things with inside the local community that we need to understand in terms of how we communicate the value of the grant program. Well, we think we're on a good trend, and we expect to meet our goal of 50% by 2020. Our property acquisition, we are continually meeting that goal of driving to about 35 acres per 1,000 population. This conversation is always a difficult conversation for us to manage appropriately to make sure that we are targeting retiring property that fits inside the mission of the agency, benefits the local community, and our commission has a standard for property acquisition that reflects that property that comes into our system should have an overwhelming public benefit to the state of Oregon and the visitors that come through our property. So we've been able to meet this goal even though our acquisition dollars have been reduced over the last several bienniums so that we can focus on the acquisition or the facility maintenance piece, which is what key performance measure 5 is, measuring the amount of that historic backlog that we identified in 1999 and how we're completing a removal of that backlog. Initially, the goal was to have the backlog built down to zero by 2014. Some of those measures were changed by previous conversations with this committee about taking additional lottery funds out of what we had in the facility investment program and shifting those to acquisitions, as well as some of the other adventures that we've embarked on, some of the things that we've talked about with the Oregon State Fair, additional parks being brought online, and programs like Marine Reserves and the Main Street program. All very good programs, but it usually had a cost in terms of how the resources were shifted inside of the agency. It's also one of the trends that we're looking at in terms of this measures our historic backlog that was measured in 1999, and our challenge is to make sure that we continue to have the staff presence to look at the facilities that were brought online post-1999 or have moved into a place that we have a higher maintenance responsibility on those facilities as they age.
Six is about our customer satisfaction. We believe we have a great measure of customer satisfaction. We challenge almost any other agency to come in with a measure of satisfaction that is consistently in the high 90s. However, that is usually not good enough for us. Our staff agonize when we go from a measure of five of an overall customer rating to four because we have comments about a light bulb not being able to be changed in a yurt for 2 days. Those are the kind of dedication and commitment that our staff look to make sure that we've got a frontline visitor service profile that meets the highest levels. It's also important to us because we know that we are responsible for almost half of our own revenue, and taking care of our customers and meeting their own needs through our other funds and the fees that we generate is a critical component of making sure that this measure is high. So we focus on dealing with safety concerns first, then we focus on those general visitor comments that revolve around the experience of their stay, and finally we look at making sure that those facilities are turned over for the next visitor who comes through. You may have seen in some of our earlier budget presentations, we included some comments from some of our visitors that we get after their post-stays in some of their parks. And generally, our visitors are very excited about their stays and the experience that they have. But they are also highlighting some trends that they would like to see more staff to be able to serve them in some of those off-peak times.
Representative Helm.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. I'm curious about the mechanisms by which you get your information for customer satisfaction. Could you explain those to us?
Co-Chair Witt, Co-Chair Frederick, Representative Helm, we get information from visitors from a variety of sources. The largest data source that we get is after you stay inside of an Oregon State Park, if you've registered with your email, we'll send you an after comment survey that lists out a wide range of, you know, sort of numerical values of how you stayed. And so we get that constantly, and that's one of the things that our management team and our rangers look through to make sure that there are safety concerns or visitor issues that we can handle specifically. This KPM, however, is developed from a survey tool that we put out on an annual basis to reach out to the public in general to ask them about their understanding of the state park system and what their opinions of how we're doing our job look like. I will tell you that our visitors are not shy. They will tell us when we have missed the mark. They will tell you when we've missed the mark. And so we try to be as responsive as we can to those concerns when they come forward. Our final key performance measure is about commission best practices. We have a list of 15 mandated best practices given to us from the Department of Administrative Services, and it's our goal that every year we're making sure that the commission is informed of the responsibility they have as the citizen-led organization of the agency, and that they're following through with those actions that are required of them as commissioners.
Those are our key performance measures. You didn't have a lot of questions. Okay.
No key questions on the key performance measures.
Okay.
At this time.
All right. So if you would indulge, we do have a video that really gets to kind of the conversation you were asking about earlier, how we're engaging. It's a Grant McComey. So I think it's a 4-minute video about some of the Ticket to Ride stuff that we're doing with our State Park Foundation. So. It might be the best thing you get to feel good about all day today.
Lou caught a fish and I had to cut off the video.
Maybe.
Press the play button again.
It's got a buffer first.
All those staffers.
Nope, that's not it.
Is that you catching that fish? Who was it?
That fish is too small for me.
Oh. Maybe. Not it.
Oregon's winter weather is something like a roller coaster ride. That is dark gray clouds followed by brilliant sunshine. Give it 5 minutes.
Yeah.
When you pressed forward, it kicked it to the next video.
So, here.
If you go back to the PowerPoint, yeah. You can click on the actual video, and it'll show.
See why they work in the Parks Department, the IS.
This is why they have a marketing department.
Exactly. You should never trust the director to do this kind of stuff.
Did she move our presentation?
It's on a list. It's on the list. It's not on the desktop right there.
We'll get you there.
I've seen that part. That's a rerun. So is that kid. That kid's been sick on his ass for a couple of days.
He's probably got like the whole blood rush into his head thing, right?
Hi there. I'm Grant McComey, and welcome to Travel Oregon's Grant's Getaways as we explore Oregon's people, places, and outdoor adventures. This week, a story that really brings out the teacher in me. I have a passion for educating youngsters, particularly sharing what I learn across the Oregon landscape. We explore a new program Oregon State Parks Foundation has partnered with educators who are teaching city kids about the country life and the values of the great outdoors. Come on along. We have a ticket to ride.
When you have a ticket to ride,
come on over. We're going to walk down this way.
There's no telling how far you can travel.
Here we go. On a trip, on a hike, on an adventure.
They're science students from Portland's Marysville Elementary School.
We're going to look at native plants, and we want to see, is it an evergreen or is it deciduous?
Today, their classroom is Maple Ridge Trail at Tryon Creek State Park.
Lichen is a combination of a fungus and an algae. You want to touch it? Touch. Kind of nice.
Teachers like Julie Bavea are science experts from eco or ecology in classrooms and outdoors.
It's oftentimes the first time that they've been in nature, and that's really amazing, just to get them out and excited.
We know that children have a natural curiosity, and they come outside, and you know everything is new, and everything sparkles, and they can run around. It engages all of their senses. It's a very embodied experience.
The experience is called Ticket to Ride, and it's made possible by the Oregon State Parks Foundation, a nonprofit that provides a financial link between the school, eco's experts like Julie, and state park properties. The foundation pays for bus transportation to get the kids here and even supplies staff like park ranger Deborah Hill to show and tell about wildlife.
We're not saying what the name of the animal is yet, but look at its teeth. Does it have mostly sharp teeth? Or mostly dull teeth.
Hill says far too many city youngsters never get a chance to explore outdoors.
It's one of the things that people find pretty magical about this park is that it can feel like you're out in wilderness.
Today, we're going to actually learn about forest food webs and tie that into some of what you saw yesterday.
Back in the class, eco instructors like Elizabeth Laddick will visit the students before and after their field trips, so to tie the lessons together.
I think I look forward to their lessons as much as the students do. It's such a treat to be able to get these students out into nature, and experiencing it firsthand is making them better stewards.
I have birds.
That's a pretty good size one compared to those other ones that we just saw. Come take a look.
Back outdoors, the kids have found a critter few have seen so close. It's a small but important teachable moment. So far, 9 Portland area schools have participated in Ticket to Ride, and the State Parks Foundation is encouraged and eager to make the program grow even bigger.
The greater vision would be to open this program up statewide to any of the schools within Oregon, and the purpose would be to fund the transportation. Often it's that transportation that's the hardest thing to getting kids out to the parks.
For a lot of these kids, it ends up shaping really the rest of their lives.
We have all the details, directions, and the contact information for Ticket to Ride, so you can reach out and learn more right here on the Travel Oregon website. So be sure to check it out. Until next week, do get out here and explore the Oregon outdoors. Let Travel Oregon be your guide. For Travel Oregon, I'm Grant McComb.
Awesome. So we just wanted to share some of the things that we're doing that address some of those questions. Can't get you out in the park, but we can bring you some of the ideas that are there. And so we would love to be able to have additional staff to help us meet that growing need and give those. You've seen the staff that were there. That's the staff that we want on the ground to actually be able to provide that interpretive, educational, and experience that makes us stand apart from any other park system in the country, I would argue. I'm working on world, but country for now. So if you have additional questions for us.
Subcommittee? I am not seeing any. Your presentation was very thorough, apparently.
Thank you, Co-Chair. If you could tell LFO, Mr. Stainer, that would be very helpful for me.
All right. Thank you very much. Unless you have anything more?
LFOs? BAMs?
No? Yes, Co-Chair Witt. We have the CFO analyst here to present the governor's budget overview.
Okay. Very good.
Actually, you could just switch over to where MG was. Actually, Mr. Chair and Mr. Co-Chair and members of the subcommittee. My name is Lisa Pearson. I'm with the Chief Financial Office. And I'm here to give a brief overview of the governor's budget. And turning to slide 2, in this presentation you heard from Parks today, they covered some of this information, but it helps to explain why the governor's budget includes the investments that it does have in it. And they were much more diplomatic than this slide was or is. User behavior has been an issue, not just the vandalism, but Cape Kiwanda has had a number of deaths that have occurred because people are not paying attention to the signage or the fences. Last year, there were some wildfires at Cotton Canyon Park. A employee was assaulted at, South Beach, Yaquina Lighthouse as well. And so with that kind of behavior and then what we were seeing out of the national park system, you may recall last year there were a lot of stories about people approaching wildlife, even though they'd been warned not to. And then that individual who unfortunately went off the path at Yellowstone and passed away as a result of that suggested that maybe this wasn't just a unique Oregon problem, but that it was a problem that was affecting society in general, and that helped inform the decision to add in additional staff through packaging. Also, the increase in park users, as was mentioned, the additional properties from the Park a Year program in the past decade, the demographic trends that we just covered, and then the cumulative effect of legislation on revenue. There have been a number of bills passed over the years that essentially waive the fees for certain groups of people. And then there have been changes in the revenue sharing agreements between the counties and the state park system. And all of these, along with the state fair and the Willamette Falls project, the state fair debt service and some other additions over the years have really constrained the agency's ability to operate its regular programming, so to speak, within its resources. And it's important to remember that this agency, except for 2013-15, has not had general fund since 1999-2001. And that's a longstanding rule, because the reason, or how Measure 66, which was the predecessor to Measure 76, came into the agency was as essentially a replacement for general fund back then. And so since then, the legislature has been very leery of adding any general fund in for regular operating costs. So the next slide is essentially a bunch of slides that you saw from the agency, but in one combined summary slide. So the line is the expenditures, and each of those bars are the revenues that are available. And the first thing to remember is that this agency doesn't, you know, get a chance to go out and apply to the general fund. The second thing is that the agency manages its revenues and its expenditures such that they have enough beginning balance, or balance, generally speaking, to cover certain kinds of costs that would crop up. So for one thing, the cash flow balance, which I'll get to on the next slide, is an issue for this agency more so than other agencies. The green shading on the bar is the lottery fund revenue from Measure 76, and that has been pretty consistently between 40 and 45% of the revenue stream. And the orange, which is the user fees, has been consistently about 20 to 25%, 27% over this time period. The yellow and gray, which are these here, are the RV county share, and over time that has changed. In 2014, there was a change to the split between the state parks and the counties. The counties went from 35% of that pot of revenue to 40%, and parks went down from 65% to 60%. That has meant about a 2% switch between the end recipients, and it's been about $2 million during this time period. So that's been another constraint on their ability to operate within their own means. The federal funds is at the top in the brown, and that is pretty consistent. We'll see what happens there. And then going back to the blue, which is at the bottom, and that is the balance. So switching to this slide, these are the components of that balance. One thing is the yellow for the cash flow that I just mentioned. This agency, like a lot of natural resource agencies, is very seasonal. And so its work pattern is, you know, a lot of spring and summer and early fall work, followed by a less intense period. And that means that as they gear up in the spring for their most busy season, they tend to spend their lottery funds first. And then as the other funds from the user fees come in late summer through October, they'll switch over to spending that. But that means that they have to have this balance available to them to take them through those periods where they essentially have low period of activity in terms of users coming in. The other thing is they do have some dedicated resources, and so the the orange, that's the ATV dedicated, and that has been pretty consistent at about 7% over the past few biennia of the balance. The salary plan, which is the red, is what agencies who don't receive general fund keep back because they have to use their own resources if there's a compensation plan statewide that's agreed upon through the legislative process. And so later on, when you get to larger general fund agencies, or maybe you're in another committee, they will talk about a salary pot, which is essentially a general fund set aside for those general fund agencies to pay for anything. And obviously, during the depths of the recession, there wasn't that much activity going on there. The green shaded section is miscellaneous, and that includes county grants, state fair, Oregon Property Management Association, Main Street. And that leaves the trust dedicated, which are things like firewood sales, but again, not really fungible to take care of regular operating expenses. And then the dark blue is basically set aside for cost increases that might happen in the future. So then the next slide shows that this agency is a direct service agency. It's not a pass-through agency, like you'll find with a DHS or OHA or education. That means that they spend most of their money on personal services, with services and supplies following up. And of course, with this agency, a lot of that would be materials for maintenance and development. during this period of about 10 years, the State Fair came on board in 2006. And so there was an increase in positions and full-time equivalents at that time. But at the same time, the Park a Year program was going on, and there was an expansion of parks. And once that State Fair cohort came on, the FTE and the position counts were fairly stable during this period. So in 2015, approximately, the State Fair leaves the management of the Parks Department, and you actually see a decrease in the positions in FTE at that time. And that leaves the agency with, you know, this expanded park system, more people coming in, people who, you know, aren't familiar with how maybe to use a park for safety reasons. And so they haven't really had the staff available to address or even provide the quality of service that they had in the past. And then that brings us to slide number 6. This is just another view of what information was previously provided in terms of which sections or programs of the budget take the largest amount of the agency's revenues. And then next are the investments or policy packages. There's a package 105 that provides additional staff at parks to meet the increased need, et cetera. This includes an investment for a safety specialist in the central services program. It includes 26 positions and 21.32 FTE in direct services, and that would be 16 rangers, 3 ranger supervisors, 6 natural resource specialists, and 1 right-of-way agent. So really you're getting at the direct customer service type of position here. The next thing is our package is the maintenance of existing parks, development of new expanded parks, which was covered previously by the agency, the fee changes to generate replacement revenue and to cover inflation. Just a note on the inflation piece, electricity and the fleet. The electricity is not something that is really manageable to a great extent by the agency because it's not being used by state employees where you can direct them not to. It's hookups, you know, and your customers want that. So there's not a lot of leeway to control it. And it's been an ongoing problem for several biennia. And we've looked at the data from the agency, from their billings, and it did look like, you know, at this point we needed to true up the budget. Carryover for outstanding grants. Every biennium, a natural resource agency will come in, and it's not just this one, but they have projects, and because of the weather, they're outside, they get delayed. And so there will be crossover in a lot of the agencies you see from this point on between biennia, where they just have to have that limitation carried over so they can close out the project that they had started in the current biennium. And then there were other adjustments, and that was what was mentioned as the 090 package. The DAS DAS budget develops just like any other agency budget. DAS gets to come in and ask for anything it wants in its agency request budget, and it's just as non-realistic as anybody else's. And then that gets trued up to some extent in the governor's budget, where a lot of that is peeled back. And then there'll be more peeling back through the legislative process. So there'll be another adjustment to the DAS price list by the time you wind up at sine die. And then the AG has the same capability of coming in and asking for what it thinks it needs, and that is not realistic usually either. So it gets peeled back at governor's, and then it gets peeled back again at legislatively adopted. And so there really is nothing else to mention in terms of this budget. It's probably one of the quietest budgets that you'll see in terms of overall policy. The rest of the natural resources will be more challenging, I think. So if you have any questions, I'd be happy to try and answer them.
Questions or comments? Well, I know the Parks Department has no authority over DAS, but one of the things that will be on the top of my list of questions to ask them will be why we can't have decent audio equipment in this room. I don't have any problem hearing witnesses in any other hearing room, but consistently cannot hear witnesses. And Representative Esquivel, I don't know if I'm the only one today or not.
No, you're not.
So it's horrid. The audio equipment in this room is horrid. It must have been a low bid wherever the hell we got that equipment. So,
I'm sorry,
anyways.
I can't hear you, Mr. Chair. What did you say?
excuse me, subcommittee members. Is there anything further? All right, I'm not seeing anything. Thank you both very, very much. I appreciate it. And my understanding is tomorrow is public comment?
That's correct. If we close the public hearing today, reopen it tomorrow, we'll have public comment, public testimony.
All right. Any members of the public have burning issues that they need to address today that can't wait till tomorrow? I'm not seeing any. All right. with that, if there's nothing further, I'm not seeing anything. We stand adjourned. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you very much.